This audio is brought to you by State Farm agent Alicia Kozacek, your local agent and good neighbour. Alicia has got you covered with personalised service and reliable coverage for all your insurance needs. Call or stop by her office on Hart Street in Buffalo and see how she can help you save and protect what matters most to you. This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.
Good morning, it is 9 o'clock. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. The minutes from the October 1st meeting were circulated. Were there any additions, corrections, or substitutions?
No. Make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. First up on our agenda is Resolution 724. A resolution in support of Operation Greenlight for Veterans. Whereas the veterans community of Johnson County, Wyoming is more than 10% of the local population and the national and above the national average of 6% of the national population, never in the field of human conflict have so much owed by so many to so few. Whereas the residents of Johnson County, Wyoming have a great respect, admiration, and the utmost gratitude for the men and women who have selflessly served our country and this community in the armed forces, and whereas the contributions and sacrifices of the men and women who served in the armed forces have been vital in maintaining the freedom and way of life enjoyed by our citizens, and whereas Johnson County, Wyoming seeks to honor the individuals who have paid the high price for the freedom by placing themselves in harm's way for the good of all, and whereas veterans continue to serve our community in the American Legion, veterans of foreign wars, religious groups, county government, civic service, and by functioning as county veteran service officers in 29 states to help fellow former service members across more than $52 billion in federal health, disability, and compensation benefits each year, and whereas approximately 200,000 service members transition to civilian communities annually, and whereas an estimated 20% increase of service members will transition to civilian life in the near future, and whereas studies indicate that 44 to 72% of service members have experienced high levels of stress during the transition from military to civilian life, and whereas active military service members transition from military service are at a high rate for suicide during the first year after military service, and whereas the National Association of Counties encourages all counties, parishes, and boroughs to recognize Operation Greenlight for Veterans, and whereas Johnson County, Wyoming appreciates the sacrifices of our United States military personnel and believes specific recognition should be granted. Therefore, be it resolved, with designation of Greenlight for Veterans County, Johnson County, Wyoming, hereby declares from November 4th through November 12th a time to salute and honor the service and sacrifice of our men and women in uniform transitioning from active service, and therefore, be it further resolved that in observance of Operation Greenlight, Johnson County, Wyoming encourages its citizens, its patriotic tradition, to recognize the importance of honoring all those who have made immeasurable sacrifices to preserve freedom by displaying a green light in a window of their place of business or residence from November 4th through November 12th, 2024, dated and adopted this 15th day of October, 2024. Commissioners, there is a resolution before you for Operation Greenlight. Is there a motion?
I make a motion that we adopt Resolution 724, Operation Greenlight.
Second that.
Excuse me, that should be Resolution 738. I think there's a typo on the top.
Yes. We'll get that corrected before it is executed.
Okay, thank you.
Resolution 738.
I'll amend my resolution to say 738.
Mr. Holly, our prevention specialist, is with us here quite yet.
That he was going to be at another meeting, but he's hoping the public works was going to make it.
All right. Well, before you is Resolution 738, as it's been read. Again, we would encourage members of the community to place green lights either on their front porch, their front window, during those days as we help veterans realize that as they make that transition that they are supported and that their lives matter. Is there any further discussion on Resolution 738? Hearing none. Commissioners, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next item for your consideration, Commissioners, is the Forest Service Agreement for the Hazleton parking lot. Mr. Crago, has the County Attorney's Office had the opportunity to review this?
Yes, sir, and I did not see any issues with the contract. I think I noted one thing, and this would probably be for Mr. Perringer, I suppose. We have to submit an annual operating plan, which I think can be the same every year.
Yes.
And I'm sure you know all about it, but that was the only thing I noted. That's really our, you know, there's other responsibilities, which I think we're already doing anyways. We might be doing the plan too, but I just wanted everybody to know about that. But I thought the agreement was fine.
And it should be noted that this will be a 30-year agreement rather than a 10-year agreement as we've dealt with in the past, which will give the property owners up there a lot more stability and also allow the county to have better long-range planning. So, Mr. Perringer, what's your opinion of the contract and the terms laid out, and specifically the ability to put down either road base or some sort of surfacing in the parking area?
Well, I think I have no problem with the agreement. Like Barry said, it's kind of a typical government agreement. We've operated under these terms in the past, so I don't see any problem there. I think it's a good deal. The beauty of it is for 10 acres, we'll probably start with an acre.
Yeah.
And then we can enlarge as we go. Like I said, we'll have to do that operation plan. I think once we get that done, then that's just something that we just update a little bit every year and do. So, yeah, I think it's definitely moving in the right direction. So,
Scott, if we were able to get this executed, because this does have to go back to the Forest Service, obviously we're operating without a district ranger, so hopefully there's somebody in that building that has the authority to sign this in the absence of that. In terms of workload that Road and Bridge has, which I know you're down operators, we're chasing our tail after a long season, is having the parking lot operational for this season going to be any issue in your opinion?
I think the biggest thing for this year, I don't think we'll see any hard surfacing go down. I think we'll just get our signs back up, mark the boundaries, and we'll just, as late as it is, we're just going to have to get through the season the best we can and manage it to the best of our ability and like we've done in the past. So, and then next summer that we can look at that, because I think it says we have earliest we can start up there, I think our rent record was, the 1st of November this year, and then we have until the 12th through 1st of 25, so there's time to get our work done and what we need to do. So we'll have to get our letter in. We've got to wait for this, and we'll get our letter in to WIDOT requesting to plow that section of road, which we do that every year about this time anyway.
So you're comfortable with us moving forward with this?
Yes, I am. Okay.
Commissioners, other questions for either the Road and Bridge Department or the County Attorney's Office?
I do not.
Well, I think it's a great idea. It's something that we've needed for a long time. Now that our service said it would give them year-round parking, and that should make people.
The 30-year contract's going to be wonderful to have.
because this is a draft, Mr. Craig, what's your preference that they authorize the chairman's signature when the final comes back from Forest Service, or how would you like us to proceed?
Well, I suspect if you contact Mr. Johnson's office and say we've approved the contract as written in draft form, they can send you over the final. They'll sign it first, send it to you. I would just ask them, would ask the commission to approve the contract as written, and when it approves in final form, you can sign it.
I'll make a motion to approve the special use permit for the U.S. Forest Service for Hazleton.
I'll second that motion.
There's a motion and a second to approve the agreement. Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right. To see our county planner, I'd like to welcome up Mr. Jim Waller to discuss the transition of the thing that previously ran the map server. I brought the assessor with you because this is really impacts his office. So, Mr. Waller?
Yes. So, Mr. Chairman, I provided the board with a copy of the contract and just a little backstory. Rich turned 70 at the end of October, or the end of September, and he had mentioned about 6 months ago that he was going to be transitioning into retirement and probably selling his company. He did find a buyer, and it took a lot of time to figure out how that would coordinate. He's got, I think, 23 total between Idaho and Wyoming as far as map servers, 17 or 15 in Wyoming. So the new owner is Terra GIS. It's Karster Veneman. He's the owner, and basically what they're looking at is trying to transition exactly what we see as far as the map server over to a new owner. We really won't notice any changes other than probably the logo at the bottom and then maybe the coloring scheme, but I really doubt there's going to be any changes. We've beta tested for about the last 45 days, just making sure that as data gets pushed in and is updated, that it's actually scripting through, pulling Steve's assessor data, any updates we push out, happens at 2 o'clock in the morning. So really, we don't see anything except for just a business change. Rich did not have a contract with most of the counties. The way he's operated for like 30 plus years is he initiated a contract to kind of get on the web, and then from there it's just always been what does it take to maintain and what data are you storing out in the cloud. So what we what our charge is basically a hosted site and then cloud data that we have to pull and pay to store. So our biggest thing we're storing out in the cloud really is aerial imagery. We got some topo quads that we're bringing in from third-party sources like the USGS and et cetera. So that's just as far as a data point, the only information that the county has on the map server are the parcels, the roads, subdivisions, and those are all kind of tied together. So this new contract is pretty cut and dry. I did email it to Barry. I did kind of review backwards to see where that cost sits. Obviously, a new company coming in is going to be a slight increase. So 10 years ago, the map server was $4,600 for maintenance. Last year we paid $5,700 for the hosting and maintenance. I knew in January is when we use, or not January, July 1st is usually when we get that bill for the entire fiscal year. And Rich didn't send it. So I actually asked him and he said that he's getting ready to make that transition and we would have a bill from him for the months that he served, and then a new bill for moving forward for like 9 months. We both got the email Thursday, maybe, or something like that, and discussed it and went ahead and submitted it into the clerk's office for payment for the next vouchers, just so we don't have a hiccup in how the map server operates. The total bill is going to be $257 more than last year. So
And we expect to see some modest increases like we've experienced in the past moving forward. Ridge typically had a billing rate when things got a little bit different than what we're doing on the map server. Most of the time, we never saw really a variation in that expense more than $500 in a year. The new contract is listed as $120, and that's kind of where we're seeing the difference. Rich was, we were paying him $75, and he definitely recognized that all the counties that he's got a product, that there's going to be a slight increase in the cost. But I don't think we've used anything different in our operation probably in the last 2 or 3 years. We've flushed as much through just to make sure that it's going to be consistent. So before you guys is that draft contract. I think Barry did have a chance to review it, and I would recommend that we move forward, sign it, and hopefully keep just continuing to plug forward as data needs to go into the map server. So
just respond to what you're feeling.
I feel the same way. Map server is pretty important. A lot of people use it. Rich's product is in 15 different counties. You can go to his website and look at stuff in any other county. It's easy to navigate. You look at some of the other counties that don't have him, and it's a it's a learning curve, anything with Esri. And I think that any other product out there is going to be a lot more than $5,700 a year, or $4,600 or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, the contract's $4,600.
I think it's, I think it should be noted that most of the citizens that review it, pretty simple. That's it.
I met Karsten at Waco. He was there. Seems like a good guy. I don't think any county that has Rich right now is thinking anything but going forward. So that was my, I think it's a good thing. I think we should just go ahead and it'll, nobody will even notice. It'll just move on.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
Yeah.
They there's a lot of customized programming that he's done, and that's initially that knowledge moving forward is where Rich was wanting to make sure that that knowledge is something that's people are that's getting purchased. And one thing he just identified with me was when he started this process in 1992, and that wasn't with Johnson County, but that was with Teton County. He's got all that knowledge of what it took to display what people would like to see. When people download information, you know, who's using that data. And he had about 30 years of experience on who was wanting to use that data. So he's really kind of dumbed it down in terms of when users want to go in and verify parcels, look at it. Our biggest hiccup has been making sure that people understand the disclaimer. We're trying to visually represent parcels. They're not legal boundaries as far as this is exactly how your property is. There is a lot of confusion between aerial imagery and then when you have parcels matching up. We live next to a big mountain, and it is hard to stretch that elevation difference from Buffalo up to the mountain. So that's probably the biggest thing, is just making sure people understand what the map server's intention is. So.
I make a motion we approve the contract with the renew the map server contract.
With Terra GIS.
With Terra GIS.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
There is a second.
There's a motion and a second to renew the county's map server contract with Terra GIS. Any further discussions, questions for either the county attorney, the planner, or the assessor? Okay. Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay.
Yeah, we won't see anything, and Karsten was fine with the bill waiting until November. That way we could take care of this. I guess as soon as I have it get signed back, we'll forward it on to him.
Back to you as well.
So,
thank you.
Right, thank you, John.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Next item on our agenda is discussion with Volunteers of America for an update on their operating plans and also a broader discussion on community mental health. So Heath, please bring up your team, and then if you want to introduce them or have them introduce themselves, the clerk for the record.
Sure.
And if you want, those mics are on. If you want to use them or not, you just like the legislature touch the button and it'll go green. But
so, good morning. For the record, I have Dr. Amy Foster, our Chief Program Officer, and I have Essie McCall, who is our Vice President of Behavioral Health, and I'm Heath Steele with Volunteers of America. So. Good morning. Grateful for the opportunity to be back here. I know Amy and Essie were here for a quarterly update, I believe, in July, so it's good to be back here in October. Had the opportunity to have some dialogue here locally. You know, I know it kind of started in the media as a, hey, what's going on down here in Buffalo? So I've appreciated Bill reached out, and I was able to talk to Bill. I know he was out of town. Commissioner Novotny, I know he was out of town for a family emergency, but we had the opportunity to connect. And, you know, I think the most important piece is probably to recognize that we could have reached out sooner and probably should have. I'm not convinced the way to reach each other is on the front of shared media, but probably on our cell phones and say, how do we get back to the table together and get this addressed? You know, we've run into some snags. I think every employer in the region has run into some snags. I think we've got workforce issues. Whether you're in the healthcare industry or the construction industry or the county business right now, and we ran up against a snag here in August, and team pivoted. I'm grateful for their quick and immediate responses to what we had to do. I think we're blessed to live in a time at the moment where technology is one tool that allows for a quick pivot, and coming out of COVID is really the preferred tool of a lot of our clients and a lot of our consumers. They don't have to get child care, they don't have to get a ride, they don't have to buy gas money, they can access virtual care. Yet I recognize that's not always ideal either. So I think there's a multitude of things we can address in this process. You know, we were talking a little bit, the letter I received you know, implied that we had some contractual issues, and you know, just for clarity, we don't have any contractual issues with the state of Wyoming, who is who we work for as the payer. We are not under contract with Johnson County in any capacity to provide services, yet you are our stakeholder. And if we looked at it as the state's happy, we probably should have looked at it as, is our stakeholder happy, and we didn't. So I think we need to kind of start at that point this morning with how we move forward. I think this is a, Wyoming's at a unique space. Went through behavioral health reform. I'm not going to get deep in it this morning. I have committed to having another meeting where we go deep and kind of look at it at the 101 level. But make no mistake about it, the grant system that we all loved and believed in under John McMahon and up through Paul and what went on doesn't exist in Wyoming any longer. July 1, we became a true Medicaid-based healthcare system for community behavioral health. And this was a very intentional and purposeful change to the behavioral health system driven by state agencies and driven by our legislature. The question that the legislature wrestled with and that we've testified on for the last couple of years, and the question the state director wrestled with, is what is government's role? What is the state's role in mental health? And Senate enrolled Act 56 makes it really clear that they see their role as serving top four priority populations. And that reduces some general access, and it reduces, as a provider, how we respond and how we get paid. We don't work in a grant system any longer. We file claims, and we file those claims once an individual comes through our door and is screened and is approved for Medicaid or approved for Medicare or has health insurance or is part of the new Wyoming benefits plan because they're part of that priority population. And again, I think as a state, and I can only speak for VOA, but I will say as a state, I don't know that the great job's been done educating on this. And I will own the fact that we have work to do in this space. Everything pivoted July 1, and I think we need to have some small meetings, and I think we need to talk about what it really means for local community mental health access. So I want to do a little bit of myth-busting, and I'd ask you just to go with me for a minute here just so we all kind of know where we're starting at. VOA served 119 individual clients since July 1st through September 30th. We have hit, that's 743 service hours that have been provided over here. These are state numbers. 900 hours of clinical care. We absolutely did not lay off and we did not terminate anyone when Northern Wyoming's peer grant from SAMHSA went away. That was a one-time COVID grant that Northern Wyoming Mental Health acquired in 2021. They did not operationalize it. They did not pull the dollars down. We were able to get it extended a year, almost 18 months, to pull those dollars down for the local communities. And the staff that were attached, that grant paid for no services. That grant paid for what are called peer specialist employees. And it paid their wages, their benefits, and it paid for some beta testing, if you will, around how effective the program could be during COVID. It was a capacity building grant. One time, we all knew it would go away. We briefed during the merger it would go away. It went away. So those employees were all offered different positions. A couple chose to not remain and do a different position. They were all offered different positions. We now use skills trainers, and that comes in under our ability to file claims and to be able that they fit the billing matrix that the state has put in place, as well as Medicaid, and it has to do with credentialing and some other stuff. We also separately have the jail contract, and I want to be really clear here. In partnership with Sheriff Odenbach, we contract with the Wyoming Department of Corrections. VOA provides all the clinical services under that contract in the jail, and the Sheriff's Department in Johnson County contract for housing those folks. Today, I think there's five people in there. Obviously, the goal of that contract is for Johnson County to have 10 people in those beds and be drawing revenue, and the goal of that contract is for VOA to be delivering that level of care within the jail. That contract appears to be running well, and at least the feedback I've gotten from the sheriff and from Director Shannon, contract seems to be solid. It is not tied into these numbers I'm reporting here today. So separate orders of business, separate payers, Department of Corrections, Department of Health. We are open. We are operating. We are using every innovative tool possible. We bought tablets for Johnson County Healthcare Center. We put them over there at the hospital. We had a meeting. We bought a system for the Johnson County Jail. We paid for it, put it in there. I understand one of our units got thrown against the wall, but I know it's being replaced with a new one up at the jail. We have hired a local clinician who's going to work here in the clinic at least one day a week and be available telehealth. We're subbing in other clinicians. We have a case manager and a skills trainers and office support here. Commissioner Novotny and I had a conversation, and I really appreciated the feedback on how do we begin to maybe think about what being down in KC with really limited hours looks like. I think we were in full agreement that being there full-time didn't make a whole lot of sense, but determining what the practicality of being available with some sort of therapeutic resource. So Dr. Foster and her team are going to commit to getting that in place and figuring out where to do it and how to do it. But we have challenges as a state. We graduated 15 master's level eligible clinicians last year from one university. We could hire 20 today. And we're graduating 112 nurses a year in Wyoming between six colleges. I'm going to guess that number is closer to 500 or 600 that are needed, and I know what our count is. I have to guess the Veterans Facility and Amy Holt and the hospital aren't a whole lot different. We need workforce housing. We need a place for somebody to live if we move them here for a job. We reached out locally. We found a couple rentals here in the community. We're trying to be really creative as to maybe how VOA rents it, and we put somebody in it. I need wisdom. I need partnership. I need guidance in this space to be able to do business here. These are incredibly difficult times for any of us, regardless of our line of work, to be attempting to do business with housing and workforce. I'm empathetic to trying to get a parking lot done ahead of the weather and what it looks like to have grader operators. We're all in that situation. And I think we're going to have to go at it together. The governor's office is running a health care task force on recruiting healthcare workers into Wyoming, and I'm not aware of any recruitment that has occurred in that space. We're paying locotenents, which I assume the hospital's probably paying travel nurses, same thing, way above what our reimbursement rate is just to have somebody out here to bill Medicaid because it's a requirement or bill Medicare. Our problems don't have to be your problems. We need to figure out how to make sure we're delivering care here, and I appreciate that, and I want to own that. But I also need you to know that the battle we're up against. I'm going to kind of kick this over to Dr. Foster and to SE, and they can talk a little bit about where they're going in the future. I looked at last year's numbers, and I guess I'd close out here. Just maybe if there's any comfort in what I'm sharing this morning, it'd be to look at last year's numbers down here in Johnson County. 313 people served for fiscal year 24. 4,914 hours of care. 15 hours of crisis, or excuse me, 15 crisis episodes, 23 hours of crisis services. We're at 119 for the first quarter, and we're over 900 hours in this first quarter. We're on track to outpace what we did last year. Now, I don't know if that's good or not. If you're on track to outpace in the retail industry, you can celebrate that year. If you're on pace to outtrack in the mental health business, I'm not always convinced it's celebratable. But we're on track right now to outpace both number of hours and individuals served in Johnson County alone just on the math of the first quarter. So I recognize that we need to get somebody here full-time that lives here, that's taking care of needs. I recognize we should have been a little quicker to the table to have this conversation. I also need this commission to understand that behavioral health, as we all knew it and understood it, changed with Senate and Rolled Act 56, and how we deliver care is going to look a little differently. And the state has chosen not to carry as much weight as they've carried in the past, and we're probably going to have to begin to talk about what more localized supports look like in this area. But for right now, I think we've got a good plan forward, and we owe some deeper education. And Commissioner, I don't know if we want to put together a little group, but I know we're committed in the next couple of weeks to get together and get that education done. Any questions for me, or I can move over to Amy and let her finish, and we can do questions at the end. What would be your pleasure?
Commissioner, do you want to hear from all of the
OAs? Yeah. Maybe to get some questions answered.
So I'll just speak into staffing a little bit. I know, like Keith mentioned, I was here in July and talking about the current situation. We had, as of August, with the Buffalo Clinic was vacant of clinical personnel, but we quickly moved staff from our surrounding clinics to come provide support here in Buffalo full-time. So we do have, or we have had, a clinician in the clinic Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. We have our on-call resources after hours that have remained available We've also had case management and life skills trainers in the clinic that, again, have been traveling over from other clinics to provide support. Now, I don't want to say that lightly, because coming from Sheridan or coming from Gillette, you know, that's been a lot on our staff, and I really want to commend them for stepping up and filling the gap where there's been a need. We've done a lot to encourage them, incentivize them to continue to provide that support. Nonetheless, obviously, it's created we've had vacancies in Johnson County that need to be filled. It's hard to recruit clinicians in this community, not just this community, though. Nationally, we have clinician vacancies. We're not graduating enough. We're not licensing enough. And, you know, Wyoming is no exception. Some of our smaller communities have greater challenges. So we have taken the approach of recruiting local private practitioners in this community to hopefully come contract with us. I think many of you know, a quick Google search will tell you that Buffalo alone has 25 plus private practitioners, many of whom are doing telehealth in other communities. The Google search that expands that to telehealth provision, it expands the list to dozens more. So we are actively approaching those folks to say, can you come serve some of the most vulnerable? As the Community Behavioral Health Center in Johnson County, our responsibility is to those priority populations who, again, have the highest needs and are the most vulnerable amongst us. And if we can recruit some of those practitioners to come offer some contracted support to help, again, those that are most vulnerable, I think we'll see some success. We've already seen two contractors who have agreed to sort of step up and come help us, which we're very grateful for here in the community, and hopefully we'll see more to come. I think, you know, he spoke to this, but partnership is essential, and we need to look to the local community to find those partnership opportunities, which is why, again, we're leveraging those local practitioners. I think it's also important to keep in mind that moving forward in the world of healthcare that we're in right now, technology is going to continue to be a resource. I know it's not ideal for all people, and it's what we have in light of workforce shortages and issues with distance between us. So we're looking at and continue to leverage telehealth and augmented intelligence even to help support our clinical team members in filling those vacancies. You know, Heath spoke to behavioral health reform and the challenges or the changes that we're looking at. I think there are a lot of promises that are coming. In terms of behavioral health reform, we are shifting the way that we do business. We're shifting the way that people access care. We're shifting the way that we get paid, which shifts the way that the community receives the care that they need. Nonetheless, there's a lot of opportunity to serve those most vulnerable, and I cannot highlight that enough. A lot of our community members across the state need services, but we have many, many people who don't otherwise have access to care who need it most, and those are the priority populations that we're focusing on under behavioral health reform. And again, I think that creates some great opportunity in Johnson County also. I don't know if Bessie wanted to add anything to that before we open it up for questions.
I have nothing additional.
Commissioner Zoll. So at one point, Heath, you said you got somebody here once a week, and then you say that you have somebody here every day now. Which is it?
We have both. So we have folks coming in to the Buffalo Clinic Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, from other communities, but we recently contracted with a local clinician who will be in person also one day a week in Buffalo. So it is both. So she'll be providing telehealth one day from her home and then in-person services in the Buffalo Clinic, but we still have people coming in from surrounding clinics as well.
Because, you know, at start, I don't want to be aggressive about this, sure, but I just heard a ton of excuses, and you finally did own some of it up. You know, you kept referring to the state cutting this, the state doing that. I mean, you guys are your own company, business, so, you know, you can't rely on everything through the state, which I understand the COVID stuff that was up there.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but I need to be extremely clear that it is the state contract that creates access for the general public. You are 100% correct. We are our own business, and we absolutely could only take insurance and Medicaid and third party and do that, but that's not the model in which we operate under. So I think that's a really important myth that is got to be dispelled, is we have to function within the contract that we have. the contract that we have with the state of Wyoming for access to the public and to the most vulnerable is tied to the method in which they fund it. So I agree with you, and I appreciate the question, but from a community behavioral health perspective, it is that contact that creates access. I can't use that contract at the jail. That's why there's a separate contract with the Department of Corrections to serve that population. And that's a significant win for Johnson County in that it's a revenue source for you to have that contract to occupy those beds that we then come in and provide services under that contract for.
Yeah, I believe we weren't getting those services met, so we actually had to reach and bring in some outside help.
I would strongly disagree with that. Your contract services under the Wyoming Department of Corrections contract are 100% compliant. Your choice to bring in a private clinician or a contractor to manage the rest of the jail-based population, I think at the rate he's charging, was a really good business decision for the county. But we are not under contract to manage the crisis needs in the jail outside of that contract. So I think part of that, and I appreciate the lack of clarity there, I think these are important conversations, is knowing who can provide what in what space. You know, I have no reason to believe, in speaking with Director Shannon and the Department of Corrections, that we have any issue with that Department of Corrections contract. I do agree that you have a mental health need, a behavioral health responsibility within the jail that BOA is not your contracted provider for.
And I guess and I understand where Commissioner Shelley is going with that, because E of jail-based assessment, treatment, and reentry, and I guess we would be under the impression that if there is a resident of Johnson County who's having a mental health crisis in the jail, that it would fall under E of jail-based assessment, treatment, and reentry. Ron made that decision, and we support him, and you are right, we're probably getting a heck of a deal there, but bottom line, we've got people, whether they're in detention, whether they're sitting in the back of the mayor's ambulance, who's with us today, in the emergency room at Johnson County Healthcare Center, or on the Main Street Bridge with a gun to their head, that we have to have services.
And I have no argument with that. In fact, I think we're going to have to think about how to do some of this differently. You know, we very interested in putting tablets in EMS. We are running some really kind of cutting edge pilot projects right now in Wyoming. Put mental health workers in the dispatch center in Laramie, Wyoming. We have put navigators on the floor in emergency rooms and credentialed them. I think there are some real cutting edge work that BOA is doing out there in this space right now. But we can't think of it like we did when workforce was abundant and before a lot of the telehealth codes opened up and ahead of reform. We need to imagine behavioral health in 2024. Outside of our area, I don't have the exact numbers with me this morning, but they're going to be really, really low. If we looked at the number of psychiatrists, if we looked at the number of psychologists, if we have one. On our medical team, we have an MD psychiatrist who's going to retire. I don't know, Campbell County may be the only hospital in the region besides us that has one currently. We have a healthcare workforce issue in Wyoming, and I'm not trying to use this as an excuse. I want to talk about how we provide services different. Us having Dr. Hoffensberger and her APRNs and that whole team available via telehealth to do prescribing and to begin a treatment plan is a real gift. We are the only community behavioral health provider in Wyoming with an MD psychiatrist, and Dr. H is going to retire. She's going to retire. Year out. I don't know of a hospital, with the exception of maybe Campbell County, that has one in this region right now. Maybe Cody Regional in trying to bring their program online. We have to imagine these services differently. We have to think about how we use technology, how we use tools. We're seeing on the correctional side a lot of geofencing. We're seeing links of watch to home confinement. We're seeing all kinds of new tools to supervision that aren't the traditional face-to-face. But our workforces are shrinking. Our workforce housing is shrinking. And, you know, we talked about, you know, Johnson County. What a gift. 24 licensed private clinicians in Johnson County. I mean, per capita, that has to outpace most counties in Wyoming. What would the gift look like to have those private practitioners working telehealth, working insurance, volunteering or contracting with their community behavioral health centers versus competing for insurance rates against each other? You know, one of the biggest challenges in community behavioral health, and you talk about everybody running their own business, I agree with that. I think fair market's important. But if a clinician can bill X hourly from their house, and they leave and go on vacation, which they're very much entitled to, where do those clients go in crisis? They go to the community mental health center. Where do they go for prescribing? They go to the emergency room. Where do they go when nobody answers the phone? They call 911. And we wind up with a crisis in the backseat of an ambulance. So I think there's opportunity to rediscover what the system of care looks like and to have those discussions, because behavioral, make no mistake about it, behavioral health redesign that launched July 1 will have a significant impact on what we've always known as the great days of grant-based care. The block grants are gone. There is not a guaranteed payment. The block grant is gone. We have to submit a claim on every client we see. We have 500 clients right now that have refused to be screened. I can't tell you why they don't want to be screened for Medicaid in Wyoming. I can't tell you why they don't want to be screened for the Wyoming Benefits Plan. I can't tell you why they don't want to answer those questions. What I can tell you is if they don't go through the screening process, they're not going to have access to the system. And that's not a VOA rule. So I think we have a real responsibility to have these conversations. And I got a little off on your question there, but I think if we're not having kind of radically transparent conversation here, we're not going to get anywhere.
So on the telehealth, is that a 24/7 deal, or
is
somebody on call that's always going to have? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of it, but that's the way our world's probably heading.
Yeah. So it is 24-hour access. Anybody can call the office here in Buffalo. It will go to an answering service, which will then patch the individual through to a licensed on-call clinician who can connect either on the phone, if that's the preference, or via telehealth video conference. Yeah, we offer that around the clock in all of our counties.
So if we take telehealth and just set it aside for a second, the things like group therapy and when you have clients in Johnson County that either aren't a fit for telehealth or don't want to, how are we going to serve those people?
Yeah, and that's, again, why we have been moving people in from other communities to provide in-service services or in-person services in Johnson County. And that's the temporary solution. It's not the long-term solution. Obviously, for the sake of those staff and for the longevity of the Buffalo Clinic. But, again, that goes back to our recruitment efforts for local clinical contacts. I mentioned to you that we have a contractor who lives in the community who will be working one day telehealth and one day in person in the clinic. That's her preference, and we have to honor that because we don't have a lot of options otherwise. But I mentioned that to say even the workforce is demanding this, whether it's the best fit for our clients or not, right? When I have one clinician who's offered to come provide support and she says, one day a week I want to work from home, I say, okay, because I know the quality of your work and I don't have a lot of other options on the table. So that's, again, the challenges that we're working with. But our hope is, and our intent in our recruitment efforts, is to continue to recruit these Johnson County residents, again, whether they're in private practitioners or retired practitioners or whoever they might be, to come offer in-person services at a contracted rate with us long-term. Until that happens, we will continue to move people in from other counties to provide in-person services here.
I just have one more quick question. Out of the 119 clients that were served the 243 hours, or services with the 900 hours, how many of those were in-person and how many of them were tele?
I don't know if you have that breakdown.
I don't think I can go that far right now at this moment, but we can get it back to you. I can go by service unit. I can't go by NPI how we bill it. I can get it to you.
30%,
20%. I don't know.
I would have to get back with you on that one. Considering that a lot of them are have to get back with you on that one.
We can drill down into the data pretty easily. So
yeah, it's easy to drill down. I just don't. I've got it broke out by service group, but not by whether it was telehealth or in person.
So in looking at the handout you provided, and Pete, thank you for sharing that on the redesign and the tiers, and the beauty of a small community is you know your constituents.
Right.
I'm looking at these wonderful families that are sitting over here, and unfortunately I think they're falling into tier four, which looks like the community mental health redesign doesn't include them because they don't fall into any of those buckets, if you will, or tiers. And so how do we get help for those families through our community mental health system, whether they want to do the screening or not? Because those are the people that live here. Those are the people that we serve. Those are the people that we care about, and we would much rather go to their weddings than their funerals. So how do we help them?
I don't disagree with you, Bill, or Commissioner Devotney. I don't disagree with you at all. I'm gonna take two different approaches at this. I'm gonna tell you that I'm really saddened that there's been 3 years of public meetings going on about this and meetings all over the state, and a lot of them were very poorly attended. Most of those meetings, it was myself and four or five other members and a couple state directors and a couple legislators in it, and we were trying to find a path forward. We got it beat back in 23, and then it took place in 24. So you're going to hear me say I don't disagree with you that there are people who go without care as a result of where this went. Now, let's move past that and let's talk about a couple solutions. I think this is a punt and study period for the state of Wyoming. It's absolutely imperative that we know who's out there and who needs the care and who's accessing free services at a community behavioral health center versus who's going to a private clinician or a private provider in the community. Not the folks that we get while the private providers are on vacation, but who's truly our client. I think they fall in tier three, most of the community that we're talking about, and I really encourage them to come in and get screened. I really encourage them to come in and get the evaluations done. I really encourage them to come in and enroll. I'm sure the county does open enrollment on insurance in November. We as an employer do open enrollment and insurance in November. I really encourage the community to come in, get screened, get their services started, and get into the system. And we can, we've kept, I want to walk into this as appropriate as possible, because I can't speak to people's insurance and incomes and what's there. And what I want to say is we're doing everything we can to get those folks in the door and get them served. And we've allowed people to carry appointments. We are able to move some deductibles and co-pays over to the state contract. There are things that we're able to help with, but you got to come through our door. I mean, if I go to the hospital, I got my blood drawn at the hospital the other day. Three things happened. They wanted to see my insurance card, they wanted me to update my HIPAA signature, and they wanted to know that my copay or deductible were due at time of service that day, right? That's how we've come to know healthcare. I'm encouraging you to do the exact same thing as a community member. Come in, get screened, let us get the process started. It's the same thing you're going to bump into at the hospital. It's the same thing you're going to bump into at the VA.
I will also add, you know, in part of this Putnam study was the state's evaluation that more than our community members than we ever anticipated actually do qualify for Medicaid. And so what we're finding through the screening process is that they're not wrong. A lot of people do qualify for Medicaid who otherwise would not have applied. But because now it's a requirement, in a different way, they're moving through the door differently. So, again, come in, get the screening. We also have opportunities. We still have a sliding fee scale. We still have payment plans for people who maybe don't qualify for those state paid services or don't qualify for Medicaid and are otherwise uninsured. There is that gap of people we're very well aware. We maintained a sliding fee scale for that purpose, and again, the opportunity to have a payment plan so that folks can continue services without insurance who don't otherwise qualify for the state's benefit plan.
I think what Dr. Foster offered up here, and this is a tough conversation for us to all wade into. I recognize that. To Dr. Foster's point, the Department of Health testified and continues to testify that there was over $3.5 million of Medicaid that Wyoming lost out on by individuals not getting screened and enrolled that could have been used towards behavioral health care, which would have saved the Department of Health money. Now, I don't know, that's not my space, but that was the argument that led to the big question, what's the state's responsibility in behavioral health? And how do we maximize the funding sources coming in? You know, we were coming out of COVID. There were three 10% cuts that went on during COVID. Hit Department of Health, Department of Corrections, Department of Family Services, hit the counties hard. That's where reform speed really built at the state level to say, how do we maximize these dollars coming in? And I'm not here to have a political conversation on whether Medicaid's the right avenue or not, and particularly in the private industry. What I am here to say is I think there's a lot of Wyoming citizens, based on the Department of Health's research, that would qualify for behavioral health funding here, and they won't know unless they get the screening done. And I know there's stigma around that screening. I get that. So now we've got stigma around mental health, and we've got stigma around screening. So how do we blow the gate open and get people into care? That's the question. Come through the door, meet with the team. Let's take a look at it. The Wyoming benefit plan is what's been built. Let's find out, and that may help in other areas of healthcare as well too. Whether you get screened at the mental health clinic, or you get screened at the Johnson County Healthcare Center, or you get screened with a private practitioner, then you can take those resources to where you need them to build that continuum of health. And it's just a new way. It's a new way of walking into this, and it's hard. And I get that, but we've got to educate on it because I don't see it going away. It's law. I mean, July 1, 2024, behavioral health reform became law in Wyoming, and as the contractor, we have to deliver under those regulations.
I've got a couple of questions for you. You keep referring to these 24 commissioners that we have in the community that go on vacation and out of the area. How many of those clients do you see?
I don't really know. I would have to look at where we have after-hours med management requests or crisis requests, and I don't know that I can really track back to who they're seeing during the day or who they're seeing for services. What I do know is that in almost every community, we see folks after-hours and for med management, and they should be able to go on vacation. Don't hear that as a negative. I want my staff to go on vacation. What I'm saying is, how do we cover for each other? We've got a great resource here.
Me like these probably professional people, and when they leave the area for a certain period of time, they turn their clients over to their another person. I think that we have a tendency to want to point a finger at somebody sure. or somebody else mm-hmm. and make it not our problem, it's your problem. And just talking around and around in circles about it, get us nowhere. We just need to come up with a solution.
I couldn't agree more. I think we needed to do some myth-busting and decide what the issue was, because I think we had a misnomer on what the issue really is. I think we're finding out what the issue is. I think it's access. I think it's a new behavioral health reform, and I think it's getting staffed up, and it's recognizing that we're going to have to use really new innovative tools to deliver care.
And I think, just adding to that, I think increased communication with our yeah. stakeholders. We're committed to being here quarterly, to writing updates on where we're at and what progress we've made and what we're seeing, and then hearing the feedback from y'all as well.
And with that outreach to stakeholders, again, I would extend that invitation, and I know you were sponsoring a coffee in Sheridan for individuals impacted by the Elk Fire. I would encourage you to do that down here. I know, thanks to the incredible work of the Buffalo Police Department and the Sheriff's Office, we had a active shooter situation that they were able to de-escalate and save. I don't think mental health offered to sit down with the officers that were involved in that, making sure that they're okay. So as our community mental health provider, I would in not only for the folks that are coming through your door, but also being available to our first responders, the people that have been impacted by the largest fire in the history of the state of Wyoming, making those things available.
I 100% could not agree with you more, and I would extend that invitation right back. That is, get on the phone, call, ask, and we'll be here as well. And, you know, we need to be in those spaces. I acknowledge that. And we need to be, I don't know anything about that situation. I can't speak to it. I do think that there's some private resources that may have been engaged in that. But feel free to speak into those spaces and let us know where we're needed. One thing that... There's a lot going on in this state right now, and there's calls coming from all directions to have mental health there. And I recognize that. This is probably the number one issue in Wyoming, or at least is the number one issue on each community and all the way through the election cycle appears to be mental health. It's also a system that is heavily, heavily in change right now. Again, not an excuse, but a reality. This is a decrease of service. Hear me say that. This is a decrease of service of reform on July 1st of 24, among one of the biggest issues out there. This is me being awfully passionate about what I think we need here and where the challenges are. But this is also a how do we come to the table? You know, it's always I want us there. But there's nothing wrong with inviting us either. You know, we'll make sure our cell phones are all the way back out. I always get a call when there's a complaint. I very seldom get a call saying, hey, we need a partner over here and jump in and we'll buy the coffee if you'll bring your team and let's get together and sit down with the folks and be at the table. Know that invite's there.
And I would just say we want to be there.
I'm grateful for the conversations we've had, and I want to know how we do it better. And it's got to be done through picking up the phone. It's got to be done through dropping an email. It's got to be done. We need you here, and we'll figure out how to get somebody here. I think we've rolled out these almost 10,000 in rapid response funding quietly and confidentially into Johnson County out of our rapid response fund. We've got five Johnson County clients up in our new crisis subacute residential program in Sheridan, first one in northern Wyoming. Got it up, got it opened, and started serving community members July 1. What a gift to have that kind of access right away to divert from WBI, divert from the title process. I know Amy and her team have done one title here in the last 90 days, got pulled in on it. You know, let us know where those resources are needed as well.
Well, before
Before we let you go, we will invite a couple of people who would like to make public comment on community mental health. We would open the floor. We just, again, for the benefit of our clerk, introduce yourself so she can include your comment.
My name is Jackie Masterson. I have a granddaughter that is in mental health crisis.
And we can't get anything here because our therapists are so backed up. They're 6 months out, and you're talking about using them for help here? Tell me how you're going to do that.
I don't have any clients that are 6 months out, so I can't speak into that, ma'am. I don't know who's 6 months out, and I don't know who the...
Almost all of our therapists have.
You're private practitioner.
Right.
Sorry.
Telehealth doesn't work, so there we go.
Have you been over to the clinic? Have we screened?
She has been a client there for 4 or 5 years. And all of a sudden in May they say, we're not going to be here for you anymore.
So Jackie, I know we talked at the last meeting that we were at, and you know, in terms of your question related to the private practitioners and how we're going to hopefully recruit some of their resources to help, that's been hard. I mean, we've been at this for months, and it is a challenge because the behavioral health needs are outpacing the resources. So we have private practitioners, we have clinicians, everybody is feeling pretty maxed out. We have been successful.
Okay. My daughter's in a group home right now because we can't get the help here we need.
My name is Jen Lytle, and what happened to Northern Wyoming Mental Health that then you came in and scooped up that, but then the doors were shut? What happened to Northern Wyoming Mental Health?
So Northern Wyoming Mental Health was acquired in an acquisition with Volunteers of America for a lot of the same reasons we're talking about here. They were down to one staff in Buffalo. They were significantly underperformed, struggling to hire, struggling to operate. I looked back over a lot of the commissioners. I think Paul was in here multiple times, the past CEO. Speaking of the challenges in mental health, I think in preparation of reform, the smaller agencies realized they weren't going to be in a position to walk through that, that it was going to require telehealth, it was going to require innovation. So Northern became DOA.
Why?
Well, for the reasons I was just sharing, that their inability to get hired, they had one staff member here at the time we acquired them. They were traveling people over.
It seems like you're in the same boat as them.
Well, I think locally placing a full clinic here has been a challenge. I don't disagree with that. As for delivering care, we're outpacing the care that has been provided the last 2 years here in Johnson County. And those are the state's numbers, not mine. I think the demand has increased greatly. I don't argue that. The mental health demand 6 months out with a private practitioner. We're not 6 months out, but we have 89, 90 clinical employees who are running around the clock. Again, not an excuse. But we have some real issues in Wyoming. We have one university producing master's level. Does anyone know how long you have to practice before you can be fully licensed and even operate in a clinic? You have to have 3,000 hours underneath a supervisor. If we hire 8, I've got to get that individual 3,000 hours. And then I got to get another one, and I got to get them 3,000 hours to get licensed. And then we try to hang on to them in a very competitive market. of hospitals and VA and telehealth, you can live in Buffalo, Wyoming and work in Arizona with a full caseload and never leave your house. Why would you want to go into the community behavioral health center and get inundated all day long on clients? And we run up against that. You know, look at nursing. We just sign a traveling contract and pick up a $35,000 bonus and go to Casper 3 days a week and come back home, and they do it. I'm not using that as a defense, but we have to think differently in these communities as to what that care is going to look like, and we have to think differently of what levels of care are available. We don't have a full continuum in Buffalo. We don't have a full continuum in Sheridan. We don't have a full. We just did a big pilot project in Campbell County, and it was a diversion project to help keep folks out of jail who were getting cited over and over and over again as a result of their mental health challenges. 1 year of study has proven that it doesn't work because you don't have anywhere to house anybody because that part of the continuum is not there. Wyoming is missing continuum pieces in all areas. In each community, we have to think regionally. You know, a lot of folks go to Casper for healthcare. A lot of folks go to Billings to a palm. My mom has to go to a pulmonologist every other week. We folks have to go to a rheumatologist. Who do we not have in our communities? Where do we go for cardiology work? We have to think about behavioral health in that same space of if we need a psychiatrist, if we need a psychologist, if we need a residential adolescent mental health facility, we may have to leave the community we're in. And that's hard, and it sucks, and I get it, but we don't have a cardiologist in every community. If you have a massive medical issue, you're going to get life flighted out. If you have a significant mental health issue, you may need to leave the community. And we need to think differently about how we bring that system together. The days of everything being at the community behavioral health center are gone. Yes, ma'am.
My name is Mary Forbes, and I contacted you guys on 8/16/24. I picked up my papers and filled them out, dropped them off on the 20th of that month. I did get seen, and you talked about getting screened and everything. That's not actually the hard part. The hard part is being seen. I went through that fairly quickly. I got evaluated. I had to call to actually contact you guys to find out what my diagnosis was. And they were like, oh, yeah, we can make an appointment for you. And I thought that was very rude. I wasn't contacted. I have waited over a month to be seen. My appointment was changed twice. I have it all written down. I was actually on my way last Monday to my appointment and was called, and it was canceled. And I respect the fact that you are shorthanded. Everybody is. That's not. If you can't provide the care, don't offer it. Because I was canceled. I wasn't rescheduled because her backload is so much that they thought it would be better that if there was a cancellation, they would call me. I haven't been called, obviously. And I was very angry. And all they could say was, I'm sorry. And I've been through the process. I've dealt with mental health for a lot of years. And I just feel like if you can't provide the care, you shouldn't offer it, because it's devastating to the people when they are actually going to their appointment and it gets canceled because for some reason it didn't fit in the schedule or there was a conflict. I was confirmed on Friday that my appointment would be on Monday, and when I was on my way, it was canceled. And then I don't have even an appointment to look forward to because there might be cancellation and we can fit you in. I don't think that's right, and I think if you can't offer the services that, and actually provide them, you shouldn't give people the opportunity to even hope for that.
I appreciate that feedback.
Can I add something to that?
Sure.
So in October of 2021, for 2 years prior to October of 2021, I've been attending Campbell County for my daughter, who was going through significant mental crisis. We had discovered that she'd been assaulted after middle school by a young man in the community, and the police couldn't do anything about it. And so we were pursuing help in Campbell County, because Campbell County was the only one that had a psychiatrist, so that I could receive prescriptions, because clinicians here do not like to do mental health medications.
Well,
they don't.
Can't.
They will. They don't like it.
What, we don't have anybody here that can do that.
Exactly. So I was going back and forth to Campbell County. What you just heard her say, for 2 years before October 2021, I experienced in Campbell County. I'd be driving. I'd be halfway there in the middle of the snow. Oh, I'm so sorry. Something came up and we can't see you. I have to turn around in the snow with my child and start our day all over again and try to tell her, hey, I know, they care. I promise, they care. I care. We're going to get it taken care of. And this went on and on and on. Finally, we found a doctor up there who was awesome. He was great. But in 6 months, he left. He transferred. He moved. The same month that he said, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to be leaving, and he was seeing us via telehealth in his office because he couldn't make it in that day. After we made sure to have an on-site therapist, my daughter does not like telehealth. My daughter could not stand to be in a room with a television. She didn't want to get on her phone and talk to someone. This is a very personal thing. She wanted to have an enclosed space between two people. All right? He says, well, just so you know, and I'm like, well, my daughter's cutting. My daughter started cutting herself. She's having sporadic attacks. She went at her dad with a pair of keys. You know, she went to stab her dad. That's not her. That's not who she is. Oh, well, let's change the medication. There's probably a problem with the medication. Well, do I need to put her on something so that she can have that transition period? No, it should be fine. And you know what? Northern Wyoming has a special group for people that cut. The same day I went down to Northern Wyoming, I filled out all the paperwork with my daughter, and I went in there and I said, look, we need to get this group by here that it meets this weekend. I need to get her in. Well, because she starts seeing Campbell County and she hasn't been seen here for over a year at Northern Wyoming Health, we have to do an intake on her. And no one's available to do the intake till next week. Well, no, you don't understand. She's hurting herself. So this is the policy. This is how we have to do it. We have to take these steps. Okay, all right. We leave. October 15th, my daughter committed suicide in 2021. What you're saying now is nothing has changed. Then a small group went to a big group, and the big group also cannot provide what the small group could not handle. That you're too big to be aware that there's a problem unless someone in the community calls you and say, hey, there's a problem. You have 4 open jobs on your site, and one is from like 3 years ago, and it hasn't been updated. And the most recent one says it's an in-resident thing. You can look. It's on your website.
On VLAs?
Yes. Because I wouldn't come here without doing research. Honestly. So what I'm hearing is our community is not the primary contractor with you. In order to receive care at the level that we need, they need to step forward and create an environment that can happen. You can't do it. Because you will require everyone to go through a screening process that they may not be capable of doing because they're in emotional crisis. Can we pick up a screen in an ambulance with someone in emotional crisis and have a positive effect? Oh, and we need to test that. We need a beta testing for that, guys, to make sure it's going to work. And then in 3 years, when we've had about 60 more suicides, then we'll look differently at it. I get it. You're saying there is a health crisis because there's not enough healthcare workers. I heard that. I started a scholarship in my daughter's name for locals, kids going to school, so that when they go to college and they come back here working in Huntsfield, they stay and they do it. That's something that needs to be done. So what I'm hearing, and what you've heard, commissioners, is that it's time for you to look elsewhere. They're not going to do it. They want to. They can't. So we need to love our own community and figure out how to do it. That's all I have to say on it. It does seem appropriate. It is the anniversary today.
I have a couple things. Every time I see this amazing lady, it makes me emotional. So sorry. I have two points from my kids, and then I have one point as my side gig. As a mom, my son was receiving services at VLA. July 1st, it changed. You've got to apply for Medicaid through this screening process. Do you know how many times I've tried to apply for Medicaid for my children? Almost every year. Every year the guidelines change. So I'm like, maybe this year we'll apply. Maybe this year we'll. So now I have an awesome job. Provides awesome benefits. Those benefits don't cover telehealth. So the minute you insert a telehealth, my insurance don't pay. Besides the fact that my son's therapist who saved his life is now gone, we will probably travel to find her because she's that big of a person in my son's life. I haven't been officially told she's left. I haven't had any contact. They haven't followed up with my son at all. Nothing. But I have got the bill from Cheyenne in the mail, so you must process everything through Cheyenne with a tricky address, and it comes from Cheyenne, and oh, you're backed up on your bill. But my kids that see private providers in this town that love our town and community don't charge me the copay. So our insurance has a $30 copay. I have three kids. Each of them is in an hour therapy each week, so that's $340 a month. I pay more to VLA than I do to those private businesses in town because they say you don't owe us anything. So my side gig as the response coordinator for public health, we've done a lot with the house trial fire. The house trial fire was fast and hard, furious. Even as public health, we were just coming along saying, what can we do to help? What can we do to help? We need mental health resources. Our commissioners were awesome. We had this big meeting. The commissioners said, we need mental health resources for these ranchers. They lost everything in this fire. The only thing we could put out was an agri-stress line. It called this AA text line. We tried everything. We put that information out. We told people to reach out if you need some help. So then we didn't really have any feedback. And there's a couple working groups that's been doing a lot of good work with the fires. Public health kind of stepped back a little bit. And then we see the response to the fire in Sheridan County. and what's offered in Sheridan County. And so I thought that would be a lovely idea in Buffalo. If we can't get our ranchers to come to a place, fill out a screening form, go in and get told to come back later, we can meet them for coffee. We can take it to them. We can go out there, take them coffee, take the counselors with us, do it. They're doing it in Ranchester. I commented on social media about it. Got told to look at the website. So I looked at the website. There's nothing for here. I called. Because you guys say to call and ask you. I called and asked, and then got asked, do we need it? And I said, yes, I will find out. I will survey every single person and give you a number. So that's what we're going to do today. We'll get you a number of how many people would show up. I'd like to ask if people did show up in Ranchester. It would be kind of a numbers game to see if it worked. But that's the kind of response we get. It's just frustrating when you come here and hear, it feels like excuses, because you said call, I did call. You said come get screened, my son did come get screened. And so I just wanted to make that note. I've had a couple more things. Oh, my biggest note that I wanted to make sure is that mental health does not discriminate. We worry about reaching these populations in the county. But I can tell you, all of us sitting right here, like Commissioner Botney said, don't meet those populations that you're trying to reach. So just a reminder that mental health doesn't discriminate.
I'm Shane Schrader. I'm the mayor of Buffalo. I also do EMS, and I'm also a deputy coroner. And quite honestly, there's enough smoke in the air this past year. I think those of us that are stakeholders need to stop putting more smoke in the air. and we need to sit down and figure out what to do to help these people. I can give two hoots in hell about what we think as the stakeholders. They put us in positions to fix it. And quite honestly, I can stand here and say, I feel these people. I'm failing them as their mayor. I'm failing them as their EMS, and I'm failing them as a deputy coroner, and I'm tired of getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning to go talk somebody up a bridge or try and talk a gun out of their hand. I'm tired of being in the back of an ambulance in a snowstorm trying to get them to a mental health facility. And I'm tired. I've heard talk about difficult conversations. Step in my shoes and go talk to one of these people and tell them why it's failed. And I'm in the corner there to investigate why it happened. Again, we need to get, excuse my language, we just need to get our shit together to help them. I don't care about contracts. I don't care about budgets. I don't care about any of that. It's them. The people that we serve and the people that we care about. The rest of us chose to do what we did. They don't have a choice to be in the position that they're in. They're here for our help.
I'm Scott Madsen, city council in Buffalo. Also, I'm taking on that. Last year, we provided $8,000 in optional 1% funding to BOA, and I do not believe that you guys actually requested that and received it. This year, we have authorized $9,000 to go towards BOA through our optional 1%, and I'm kind of uncertain now because our budget meetings are back in early part of this year, but since July 1, I'm not sure where our money is going. Is it, if it's still needed, or are we, what are we getting for our money that we've sent to you now that this whole method of funding and operation has changed in your organization?
I don't know if we've accepted 1% funding this year. Previously, typically the 1% funding that we do receive when we do accept goes towards infrastructure, so to expand our telehealth services. So we purchase tablets and things like that for communities to access telehealth services.
I have a question quick. I'm Kristen Friedrich. I'm the nurse manager of public health. So as far as hiring healthcare, especially in our community, I fully understand that. As far as the housing, I fully understand all that. I genuinely get it. But clearly, we have a big need here, and we're just trying to figure out how we get that need met. My question kind of stems from, you briefly mentioned on this, but in Sheridan and Campbell County, are those fully staffed?
It depends on the program. Our outpatient clinic in Sheridan is not fully staffed. We're down quite a few there too. Campbell County, I think we just got to full staff capacity in our outpatient clinic. Our residential facilities are fully staffed. So we have a substance use treatment program in Sheridan for men and women, and those today are at capacity. And then we have a crisis stabilization program in Sheridan as well that is fully staffed.
So my question is, I mean, you say we have somebody here every single day, 8 to 5. If we can get people hired in those other communities, is it an option to hire more and have them coming in? And on that, you made a comment about how, you know, healthcare is just changing. We don't have fully staffed facilities in these small, you know, if we get a heart attack, we're being flown out. I get that. But I think we're just asking for the bare minimum. We're just asking for that outpatient, and it sounds like maybe some of these other communities are more, I don't even know if I'm going to say this right, but affordable to live in. There's more of a housing market. Whatever those problems that we're running into here maybe aren't quite problems in those other places, and if we can get people to come in, yeah.
So, thank you for that. I think this is where the solution part of the conversation It's going to require some flexibility. Our hiring strategy right now has been to really hire up in the communities where we're capable of bringing more folks on. jobs for spouses exist there. Housing is a little more available. But that means you have people traveling in. That means you have telehealth. Now, obviously, our top priority is to get some folks hired and center them here and have them remain. I think as you, I'm sure, experience, and I know Wyoming's, the state of Wyoming Department of Health is experiencing nurses, locotenens. I mean, that's a state hospital, but it's barely, I think, 37% staff that's local. The rest is locotenens coming in. I'm not using that as an excuse, but I have to use it as a real problem. You have to have a license. You have to be able to practice. You have to meet the requirements to sit in that clinician role. And so whether you're a detention officer and you've got to go off of basic training, or you're a nurse and you've got to have a degree and you got to pass your NCLEX, there are minimum requirements for folks to sit in those roles. And those individuals are incredibly difficult to come by at this moment. Not your problem. I understand that. But it is a community issue of how do we recruit workforces into these smaller communities and keep them here? How do we get them here and get them housed? How do we get them here and get their spouse here? That's important. So what we're doing, to your point, is there are areas that we've been successful in hiring up. We have a big clinic in Cheyenne. We have a clinic in Laramie. There are just some realities that there are more spousal jobs and more houses right now in that area, which is the gift of allowing telehealth in. And I recognize that not everybody loves telehealth. I'm not a huge telehealth fan. However, if I have to make a medical appointment out of state in January when I-90 is closed, I'm grateful for the opportunity to link in on that, too, with a pulmonologist or a specialty care. I hear the prescribing. And I don't even know what doctor up in that space. You are 100% correct. There was one prescriber in this region over in Campbell County. We do not have a prescriber up here in the northern part of the state.
I think it's absolutely an option to hire in some of our larger communities where we have more resources. The problem is we're also seeing limited applicants there. The number of people that meet the degree requirements and licensing requirements coming out of school nationally, annually, is very, very low. The other thing it concern is it's not sustainable. People, yes, we have staff driving it over to Buffalo now and who are very committed to being here and just very happy to be part of the efforts to keep things afloat. But weather hits, and suddenly they can't get in here. There's a commitment to the community that comes from community members that we're trying to leverage in all of our smaller communities. And I think it's essential. We have to continue to offer in-person services, especially for the youth. Telehealth is not always a viable solution. So we have to figure out a way to bring them in-house. And, yeah, we will continue to ship people in as long as we have to. But long-term, we need Buffalo community members in Buffalo.
Some of what I've heard this morning, and I'd welcome some individual conversations, but I do want to provide a couple of points. It's not DOA that's requiring you to get screened. That is the mechanism which is paying for the care. It's not us. If you choose to access state-funded mental health services, there is a process that has been put in place by the state of Wyoming, just like there would be for CHIP, or just like there would be at the hospital up here, or for any benefits program, there's a process. I cannot, and I will leave this here, I can't waive your copay and I can't waive your deductible. Legally, that is actually insurance fraud, and I can't do that. So there are some areas that I cannot affect for you in that space. What we can do is work to get you screened and get you qualified and determine what benefits you're eligible for, or to access it through self-pay or insurance, Blue Cross Blue Shield, or to access it on a grant, like a state opioid response grant or something that's paying for care there. I hear the pay in the room with this. I think we all have our own stories with mental health and how it's affected our families and our lives. there are certain things that we as the provider can advocate for, but cannot, we can't address how those services are paid for under those benefit plans. Those are state benefit plans, and again, they function like CHIP, they function like your Blue Cross Blue Shield, your TRICARE, whatever mechanism you're using to fund healthcare. And I do think that's really important, that there's just not this big pot of money out there that the state gives and says, come on in and get care.
Do you guys keep a grant writer and a researcher on your staff to pursue?
Boy, we do. And if we didn't, we'd really be at a loss in a lot of this.
And to be honest, we have several vacancies in that team as well, which is really hard to fill.
Yeah, boy, I mean, I we could bring more grant writers on tomorrow if we could locate them. They're well advertised and out there jobs.
And I think, to your point, while there are certain legislative, things in law that we cannot necessarily change, what I will and commit to is cleaning up communication and so those wait times. I think getting back to you when you need the care is important, and we will definitely, we'll get better.
Where are you putting the jobs out there?
Indeed, multiple recruiter agencies. Indeed's a big one we use. They're out there. So
I just know if we can telehealth from Arizona to here, we can definitely find a grant writer in Arizona for here.
Well, and that's what we're having.
That's where we're having to look. Yeah. Absolutely, and it's a new way of thinking. I mean, the first thing I heard from a foundation was, geez, we'd really like to have the grant writer down here having coffee with us once a month and learning our priorities engaged, and I'm having to say, we had to hire that other grant writer from South Dakota. That really is, there is an entire workforce conversation here that is separate from today's discussion.
But you're a religious organization to some extent, correct?
We're a faith-based nonprofit, that's correct.
So pursuing faith-based grant writers could be something that you include. And there are people that do this from here, not from here.
We welcome men to talk to them, that's for sure. And they're out there as jobs.
That's the basis of our hiring. Yeah. We're a community behavioral health nonprofit, so that people have to have passion for this work. And it's hard, it's hard work. And this is why when we talk about clinician recruitment and retention, this is a reality we face. When a private practitioner bills $120 or $140 a service hour and Medicaid reimburses at $87, which is our primary mechanism, we can't pay what a private practitioner is going to get in their private practice, right? And so we hire these clinicians straight out of school. We help them get their supervised hours. And then the population that's served in private practice is often lower need. Pay is higher, they make their own schedules, they go to telehealth, right? There's a lot of flexibility. It's hard to retain a community behavioral health, and we're saying you have to be available around the clock. And, the patients we're serving in a lot of our communities have active psychosis or, really difficult conditions that we're trying to manage. So there's a high burnout rate, and it's just tough work.
Reality is we are, as a society, in a mental health crisis. And when a person is in their pit of depression, whatever, they don't care what time it is. They don't, doesn't matter how old you are. When you're in your pit, you're in your pit. And you don't always have time to call and make an appointment. You're just so in your pit. That is what I see when they're talking about failing, but we're not really failing. It's just that Satan's winning as far as I'm concerned. you can laugh at me, I don't care, but a lot of people don't know this about me, but I am a suicide survivor. I got most of my mental health help from Northern Wyoming Mental Health for 10 years. I moved over from Cody because I was getting no help there. Jody Verplanke, who now works in the hospital,
she was my very first counselor. And for 10 years I was there until they just said, Jan, you're good, you know. We can take you off the books. There's people that need the help more than you do, so we're closing the books on you. You're stable. I still take medications, and I have for 24 years. I'm not ashamed to say it. I can talk to anybody about my story. I advocate. I'm on the Suicide Prevention Coalition. I advocate, talk to people that people come to me that are depressed and talk to me because I've written letters to the editor about my life. I'm not afraid to stand up and talk about what I've been through. And the billboards out there by the high school, the 911, I've got donations to have that put out by Buffalo High School on the corner, Casey High School, I've got the donations to get that put up at Casey High School, because everybody that I went to, I said, okay, Jan, God saved your life. Do something with it for what you've been through. Went around. First, I joined the coalition, and I went around and got donations to make those billboards. It cost us nothing, because every person that I went to talk to get a donation to help build those billboards said they had a family member, a friend, a high school person. Everybody in this room has probably been touched by a suicide, and I am. There's the good, there's the bad, there's the ugly part of it. Well, I'm a success story, and I'm using that to help other people. And I have helped other people from blowing their brains out because I have made myself available publicly. And I'm not a clinician. Big kids, they just need somebody to talk to, or an adult, or whatever. I'm glad that I am the person that I am, and that I have a merciful heart, and that God saved my life from what happened to me, because I have been able to help people, And the bureaucracy, the money, the getting in the front door, all it doesn't matter when you're in your pit and your problem might be only this big, but when you're in the pit, it's this big, But anyways, I just needed to share that with everybody in here to let you know that our community is such a loving, giving community. And this issue is big, not just in Wyoming, but all over the country, And we need help here. But like I said, when people are in their funk, it doesn't matter what time it is. It doesn't matter where they are. They're not going to go talk to their mom or dad. You know what I'm saying? So I don't know how to, like what you've been through. You could be, and you probably do have help and talk to people, what I've been through. But I don't know what the answer is, because I know exactly what you're saying. You're not graduating people that want to go into that field. I have my life to do all over again. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Jan, thank you for sharing your story, and congratulations on your continued recovery. Wonderful. I would love to have a conversation with you about how we can partner, and your story.
I'd go sit in your office and talk to people if you want me to, because sometimes that's all they need, is somebody to be quiet and listen. Let them just talk to me, get it out.
And I think that's why a lot of parents were concerned when the peer program went away, because that's something that was probably the least amount of money that you could fund out of all your programs, and could we have found money if you let the community know, hey, this is going to end, I bet we would have come out in groves to support it and
and kept that going, because that's twice my kids that we just walked in and found with the peer counselors, and that was enough for that date. So something just as simple as that.
Thank you for letting me speak.
When I think we'll go ahead and close public comment and Northern, or excuse me, POA, we give you the last word if you'd like.
No, I would just say I appreciate all the feedback from the community. It sounds like we've known this, but we have some continued work to do, and we're committed to doing that and increasing communication with our community and stakeholders. I think will be top priority as these changes continue to unfold.
I would just echo the same and say we've all got work to do. And we all need to get to the table and have a deeper conversation sooner about maybe where some supports are, even if it's just coming in and sharing your story, or if determining how we get some of this punt and study process a little more to the front end.
And but people want to talk to people that have been through. They don't want somebody to say, "Oh, I know how you feel," when you don't. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Real people. You know what I'm saying? Real people that have been through, they're going through.
Not telehealth. They want that person in front of them.
I didn't make it right.
No, you're good. I think that's really important. And I don't know very many people that haven't been touched, and I hope that opportunity is there to have a much larger conversation. The virtual piece, I hear you on. I don't have a quick fix this morning. Everything we knew about behavioral health prior to the start of COVID and everything we're experiencing now is one of this nation's largest mental health issues. And there are things that have come into place that have changed the process. And I don't think telehealth is going away. It's not going away in healthcare. It's not going away in Zoom. It's not going away in Teams. It's not going away in a matter of which you can access. Most insurance companies have online case management right now that you've got to engage with in some capacity, but we're going to do our best to attempt to get some face-to-face stuff.
Another thing from what I've been through, an individual has to want to get out of their pit. You got to want to. You got to want to make yourself good. I didn't like myself when I was there. And I'm like, this is not a tan, When I was doing Northern Wyoming Mental Health for 10 years, I did partly a real counselor, when it was Jody, the Planky, and all of her awesome crew she had. And then I started watching it go into the TV thing. And I am not a techie, but I can certainly talk to somebody on a TV screen that if they're going to help me with my medication or but a lot of people don't like that, and kids don't like that. But I was in a position with myself. I'm gonna get better. I don't like this. I'm gonna do what I gotta do to get out of my hole. And the medication's changed a lot. So now here I am. I'm a good story. I'm a survivor. I made it. There's people out there that are so not like me. They just, if they can't get what they need, they're just going to, like the mayor said, end up at the morgue.
Yeah. We appreciate you starting the dialogue. I know it's going to be a long conversation process.
Thank you. Great commissioners.
Thank you.
Can you leave a contact info for me? I got a couple ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Who?
I got it.
Barry has it, yeah, and Bill has it. If that would work, I'll get out of your way. They've got my cell phone and my email. Please feel free to use it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I'd like to welcome Ashley Bassett with Johnson County Fire Relief Fund to introduce the Ashes to Table Community Dinner.
Mine's a little lighter, sorry. So, as you're well aware, we have a very big event happening on Saturday. Before I get into that, I do want to tell you I asked Meg for an updated number. We have raised over $100,000 so far for the Johnson County Fire Relief Fund. $20,000 of that is from a Plank Stewardship Initiative grant. And the big news from the Fire Relief Fund is the application process is out. It's open. And the producer advocates are contacting producers, checking in on them, letting them know that that is open. So it'll be open from the 14th, so yesterday through the 14th of November. So we're very, very excited over that. And we've also got a weekly briefing that is going out, kind of similar to the YDOT briefing. We might have stole that idea from the YDOT briefing, if you want to know the truth. So the big thing happening this week is the Ashes to the Table dinner will take place on Saturday night. Shut down Main Street. It's starting at 3 on Saturday. Yesterday we got a huge push from Fox News, and in the first 5 minutes after it aired, we had $2,000. And since then, we've collected over $9,000 from the Fox News errand. And so that has been a huge, huge deal for us. Other promotions have been, if you buy a pizza at Pizza Hut, you'll find a flag or a flyer on top of your pizza box. They're in your bags at Breadboard. They're in your sandwiches at Dash-In. They're in your grocery sacks. And we sent over 400 of them out in every single tri-tip that went out with the 4-H tri-tip meal the other day. So we are getting the word out. Today we have burgers coming in. We had a local business call and say, I'm ordering ketchup, mustard, and pickles. They'll be here today. So the community is really, really getting behind us. And so we just wanted to kind of give you an update. While we were sitting here, I got a voice message and text message from Bighorn Bentonite, from the president of their company, saying we want in. So I'm supposed to call her when we're done. And she said they've got some monetary donation to go. All the money from the dinner on Main Street goes to the Jones County Fire Relief Fund. We will print t-shirts on site that night with Get It, Got It down here. 100% of all t-shirt proceeds, they're donating the t-shirts, goes to the relief fund. We'll have sweatshirts available. All that their cost goes to the fund, as well as V-necks. We'll have a 3x20-foot banner that will hang across Main Street that says Rebuilding Our Community Together, as well as another one that will hang on the lowboy that's, or on the stage, which is a lowboy from Carlotz that says From the Ashes to the Table. The FFA kids are coming to help set up. The 4-H kids are coming to help set up. We have sold, I don't know how many tables we have sold as a sponsorship. When we sell a table for $300, you do not get 8 chairs with your table. You get a tabletop to decorate. That was our easy form of how do we decorate for this monstrosity. But people are decorating their tables. They don't get the chairs with them because it is open seating. We want everybody to sit together. And what we will do is we will stretch from the bridge to the First Northern tables, and we will butt them end to end so it's just like your dining table at home. We've been saying 3, but essentially there's 6 because we will put a food tables going the opposite direction in the middle of the street, so not everybody has to walk up the full length. We'll have an information booth up that night that will have a lot of information. And on the mental health card side, Robin, thank you, because that reminded me to put this in there, is there will be the ag magnets on every single table that night for the mental health and the crisis number. And our producer advocates are checking and seeing where everybody is at on that. The other thing is parking. We have designated senior citizen and handicap parking to take place in the Crazy Woman Store parking lot or Farm Bureau parking lot, A&B Bank's parking lot, and First Northern's parking lot. Everybody else we are encouraging to park at Buffalo High School. And the BATS transportation or Buffalo Area Transit is shuttling everybody every 30 minutes. It will run a shuttle from the high school down. So that was one suggestion of the Chief Bissett, is how do we alleviate parking congestion, and that was an idea we had. So anyways, I think you're gone from NEPA, I think is what I heard, but we'll
be back.
Sweet. We have a really kicking good band that night. We had a big band sponsor from a local business from Century 21. and they wanted to sponsor the band, told them what it was going to be roughly thereabouts. They were on board, and the band called and said, no, we're going to do it for free. So now they are also a very, that business is a very large burger sponsor for us that night. So there will be 33 cases of burgers coming in today that we obviously couldn't get that many burgers locally. We tried, but they just couldn't get them in, so, or couldn't produce that many that quick. So they are being ordered in, and we don't know what to plan for, so we're planning for 1,500. Rain or shine, to quote a local rancher, we don't get to go home when it snows and rains. Wear your coat, dress for the weather. It is October. It will not snow that day. It will not rain that day. That's all going to be on Thursday and Friday, and we're going to celebrate it very, very much. But that night, wear your coat, and to quote Gordon Taylor, if it makes it rain on that day, we will do it again the next day, and the next day, and the next day. I just hope he has another burger source, because I don't have one after that. But our community has been pretty amazing. The cookies being made, the beans being made, the coleslaw, everybody is. And I want to thank Kristen, because she printed out 2,000 flyers for us, or a ream of worth of flyers, which comes out to 2,000, and it was amazing. So we have handed out over 4,000 flyers so far, and they went back and printed another 1,000 on Saturday. So, but that is the word from the committee, and the committee is doing great stuff. So,
so the who, what, and when that you didn't get to quite yet, so I'm going to put you on that. So what time does it start?
6 o'clock, sorry.
How much does it cost?
It is, that's the cool part. This is a cash donation only. If you want to put $5 in the bucket, fantastic. If you want to put $5,000 in the bucket, fantastic. It all goes to the foundation, or to the fund through the Johnson County Foundation, and it is a cash donation. If you want to buy a table, like I said, you're just getting the tabletop to decorate, make pretty, or whatever you want it to look like. That's $300. And with through the website, I have noticed we have had a couple people log in to the Jot Farm asking for help, or where if you want to help, you can sign up, that have come from the website or from Fox News yesterday saying, hey, we've sent this amount. So I thought that was kind of cool. And we're getting calls from Sheridan and Gillette, people wanting to help, which is exciting. And there is a similar event or a big event in Parkman that night with the Munsicks. And so I think, as terrible as this Elk Fire is, it's been a huge plus for promoting our event here, as well as helping them too. So, but yes, Saturday night, the 19th, we will start at 6 o'clock. We'll close the street at 3. At 3 o'clock, all the parking on Main Street becomes exit only. I'm really, really hoping that the businesses, we've talked about this a little bit, the businesses on this, the far side of the street, will tell their people, you need to go move your car at least to the other side of the street, because at 4 o'clock we have to pull the trailer across. The band needs 2 hours. And so at 4 o'clock, you're going to have to figure out how to whip a U-turn amongst the tables that are being set up down the middle of the street. So, but the kids will start setting tables at 3:30. And we'll start rolling at 6. We have no idea how many people are coming. We just know everybody should bring a friend, and let's have a good time. And it's a big celebration. There will be no speak. There's no set program up on the stage other than a prayer and a thank you. So we hope everybody can join us.
Do you still have tables available for adoption?
Yes, okay. We do. We have roughly at least 100 tables. As of last night, I was 2 tables shy of that 100 mark, and or of 125. Is what we figure. We have to have at least 125 tables by the time you put the food in. We have tables coming from Claremont. We have tables coming from all over Buffalo. We have tables coming from KC. And over 1,000 folding chairs. And so we were 5 chairs short of 1,000 last night, and I know that was fixed this morning. So people have come out of the woodwork. Somebody says, I only have 4 folding chairs. And I said, I'll take all 4. Well, I have 1 table. I'll take it. So we'll mark them all when they get here so that they're all returned. And it's a big endeavor, but it's been pretty cool.
Thank you.
That's what I have.
Thank you.
Any questions on the event on Saturday?
We hope everybody can come hang out with us or come.
And it'll be what an awesome community we have out here.
Yeah, I don't think we could pull this off in another community. Maybe we could, but not like we could in Johnson County.
Thank you very much. Commissioners, the next item on the agenda is a request from the county attorney's office to appoint an outside counsel. We need to make a motion on that, and then we can read in a statement. With that, commissioners, what's your pleasure on the request from the county attorney's office on the outside counsel?
We appoint an outside counsel for the pending lawsuit.
So, Commissioner Perry, next tab, please. Other way. One more. All right.
Okay. Move to retain Mitchell Edwards of Nicholas and Tangeman as the outside counsel for the lawsuit brought by Christopher Williams, Amy Williams, Cindy Barlow, Charles Hudson, and Louise Hudson, Marion
Ferrari,
and Shannon Smallwood against Johnson County.
There is a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion or questions for the county attorney before we vote on that?
It's Houston, not Hudson.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's Ed Houston, Lois Houston, and it was Sharon Smallwood.
Sorry.
Any questions for Mr. Craig?
I don't think so.
All those in favor of retaining outside counsel, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Recently, Johnson County was served with a lawsuit seeking unspecified relief from 7 individuals concerning county budgets dating back approximately 7 years ago. One of the parties to the lawsuit is the former Johnson County assessor. Because Cindy Barlow was previously represented by the Johnson County Attorney's Office and was assessor during some of the time periods in this complaint, after consultation with the Wyoming State Bar Council, Johnson County must retain outside counsel to ensure no conflicts of interest or violation of attorney-client privilege. The cost of this outside counsel will be borne by the taxpayers of Johnson County. The Johnson County Commissioners have retained Mitch Edwards to represent them and the county as we seek resolution to this lawsuit. The state of Wyoming was also named in the lawsuit and will be represented by the Wyoming Attorney General. This will be the only statement that Johnson County will be making on this pending litigation, and we direct all inquiries to our attorney, Mitch Edwards. Johnson County disputes all claims in this lawsuit and looks forward to its resolution. Should I think we have reached the end of our regular agenda, which brings us to a time of vouchers. Madam Clerk, were there additional vouchers that you needed to add from the report that Becky circulated last week?
There was one additional voucher for the purchase of a stove for the Sheriff's Department, which would bring the total the purchase of that is $4,500 and bring the total vouchers up to $232,204.83. The report you have in front of you, Chairman, is the updated report that does include that voucher. And so we respectfully request approval of the vouchers.
Commissioners, did anyone have any questions after a chance to review the bills or have any questions on the stove that the facilities manager was able to find at an online auction and saved the sheriff's office a fair amount of money on that? Okay. What is your pleasure on the vouchers?
I move to approve.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor of approving the vouchers in the amount of $232,204.83, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We did. Yep. So we are now at the point of our agenda. If there's no additional business from the clerk, the county attorney, or the commissioner's assistant, we would welcome any public comment.
On the mental health center stuff, how do we find out what happens, or do we need to write letters or something to help you guys do what you need to do, or is there something you can do to help?
And that is an absolutely very timely and appreciated question. Certainly, if you would like to write a letter with specific concerns, you are more than welcome to either direct it to Volunteers of America. You can send it to the commissioners, and we can use it. I have a feeling that there is about to be a major working group established on community mental health here that will involve Johnson County Public Health, Johnson County Healthcare Center, hopefully all of those private clinicians that are in our community, and then any stakeholders, as well as the City of Buffalo, the Town of Casey, and the Johnson County Commissioners, and our legislators, because it appears that a lot of this is being driven by Cheyenne, and there may be need for some tweaks to the recent healthcare redesign.
Okay, so to send you guys a letter, where do I send it to?
Here at the commissioner's office, and you can electronically, we're very easy. It's commissioners at johnsoncowi.gov. You're more than welcome to drop it off in our office with Kristen Kenyon, our administrative assistant,
okay,
or you can mail it here.
Okay.
Is there any additional public comment?
I just want to thank you guys for your letter that you addressed to Mr. Steele and taking an initiative to get the ball rolling.
Thank you. Any additional public comment? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and close public comment. Commissioners, is there a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn meeting.
Okay. Is there a second? Commissioner Shelley got you just by air.
Yeah.
He did, Commissioner.
Shined again.
So I'll take that as a second.
Yeah.
Okay. It has been moved and seconded to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
This audio was brought to you by State Farm agent Alicia Kozacek, your location agent and good neighbor. This is 307 Net Info, connecting community.